Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 28, episode 5 of Dinner Daily Zeitgeist for April 27th, 2018. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Dwayne The Rock Johnson's Depression. No wordplay, just we need to come to terms with it, you guys.
Give him a hug.
And I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
The morning rain clouds up my window, and I can't see at all. And even if I could, it'll all be gray. Put your picture on Miles' wall. It reminds me that I'm with that gang. I'm with that gang.
Dear Slim. Okay, now, thank you so much for that, a.k.a. from Dan Peters on Instagram moments ago.
Not I just
moments
wanted ago, to go for like 20 minutes.
I'm just going to one day do the thing version that pisses the few people off on Twitter. Just, they're too long. Skip right through.
And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the brilliant writer and journalist and hilarious comedy writer, Mr. Robert Evans.
Hey.
Yes, that was amazing. AKA Robert Evans.
Yeah, famous Robert producer. AKA not the Robert Evans that everyone actually knows. Yeah. That was a poor Google-based decision.
I remember the first time someone had mentioned you, I thought I was like the producer. I think it's, which is unfortunate, you know, because you are very different. You're very unique, and you should have your own idea.
Yeah, I produced Godfather 2, which is a very different, some say superior film. Right. Yeah.
And then, they don't know the documentary's coming out with you, The Kid Stays in the Podcast.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Robert, you...
Cool reference.
Solid.
For no one. Yeah. I look as I look around, lost eyes.
No,
anyway.
No, I got it. Documentary now just did a spoof of The Kid Stays in the Picture. That was pretty funny.
Thank you.
But yeah, that's a very good documentary. Robert, you have a podcast coming out.
I sure do.
On this very network called Behind the Bastards.
What?
But before we were working on this podcast together, you worked with me at Cracked. You spearheaded new types of media at Cracked. You created the personal experience section. You went on actual overseas journalism trips, as they're called in the industry, by real journalists, mm-hmm. probably.
Probably.
You went to Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
It was nice.
Cool.
Really good food.
Good weather, good food, you know?
Well, the weather was kind of garbage.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be honest. But yeah.
Hung out with some Kurds, shot giant anti-aircraft guns on the back of Jeeps.
It was an anti-building gun, too.
Right.
It was like a giant recoilless rifle. But like you see him shoot, like I've watched a bunch of people shoot a bunch of rockets at this point. I don't think I've ever seen someone fire a rocket launcher and not have a little bit of a smile on their face.
Right.
Like you can tell they're always really digging it.
Enjoying themselves.
Yeah.
Kurds are sort of the Appalachian folk of the Iraq conflict, right? Like they're kind of like scrappy and can rig together a...
Yeah, that would be like, that would be one comparison to make. They live up in the mountains. Everybody's constantly fucking with them, both in like Iraq and in Turkey and in Iran. Like,
right.
Basically for the last like 1,000-ish years have been fighting everybody who lives around them and like hiding in the mountains a bunch. But
yeah.
They're nice. They're great at cooking. They're cool guys.
Yeah, so half like Appalachian people.
Yeah, yeah.
I won't say which half it is. Mm-hmm. I love my Appalachians. Cool, man. Behind the Bastards. We'll talk about it at the end of the show, but just real quick up top, we're really excited about having it on. What's the basic premise of the show?
Everything you don't know about the worst people in all of history. So, like, we're talking about Saddam Hussein, but we're talking about his career as a romance novelist, and I read his bizarre novels and review them for the crowd.
Like a very self-serious romance novelist.
Yeah.
Like, he thought this was going to be what he was remembered for.
This was his... He considered himself a writer before he was president of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was his main goal,
mm-hmm.
Was to be known as a serious author.
Right.
Yeah.
And we recorded episode 0, which is out now that mm-hmm. people can go listen to, about Hitler's long-held struggles with farting.
Yes. And that's not a joke.
No.
Also
the fact that, like, you see all these guys on, like, the far right, the alt-right now, who are, like, look ridiculous, and they're internet nerds who wear, like, fedoras, like, out in the world, like it's 1940, and they have, like, leather trench coats. Like, Hitler dressed the same way.
Right.
Like, he always had a fedora, he always had a big leather coat, leather shorts. Everybody thought he looked like a weirdo. Leather shorts.
Oh,
he loved his leather shorts.
That's a decision. That's a choice.
Mm-hmm. And
you know?
He carried a whip everywhere.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Zam Zaddy.
Yeah.
Walking around with his leather outfit and a whip. Okay.
I feel like you could rock a leather outfit and a whip.
I could
walk.
Yeah, yeah. I could definitely rock the leather shorts for sure. I mean, I have leather shorts. I have leather shorts.
You have leather shorts?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're real short.
They'd better be.
Nice, nice.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm hanging out the back of them a little bit, but you know, gotta. Gross. You got to be proud. You got to work with what you got.
That's a direct Hitler quote.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm guessing you haven't worn those in front of your mom, or else she'd tell you.
No, she made them for me.
Oh really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nice.
And then she was like, "Fine, this your." She's like, "Your decision to look foolish like this with your legs, but I guess I will knit this together."
And also, you have a early episode of Behind the Bastards about Hitler, the fanboy.
Yeah, he was a big fan of like this weirdo Wild West novelist called Carl May, and like based a lot of his strategy in World War II off of these Wild West books written by a con man.
I was comparing Hitler to Kanye and Donald Trump. We won't have a whole section about their love-in that's been happening, but my main point was that Hitler was a narcissist, right?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah, who could?
Really?
I don't think anybody could say. And I think part of the Hitler story and like the story with a lot of these dictators is that there's nothing more dangerous than a frustrated artist. Like,
right.
it's a good thing that Kanye's seen success as a musician, because
right.
otherwise he would be like leading a revolution or something.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or just like a better dressed diamond in silk.
Right.
As my voice cracks.
I think I assume everybody knows about his narcissism, but there's some great pictures of him like behind the scenes, like posing in front of like mirrors and stuff, like doing different facial expressions from his speeches. And he was super into himself and his image and stuff.
And the reason he didn't get married until like right before he died is he thought it was super important that the women of Germany see him as available, because he thought that his sex appeal to the women of Germany was a critical part of his popularity. He couldn't risk alienating the women by getting married.
He's like, this is a mustache ride. They can't refuse.
Exactly. They've got to know that Hitler's open for business.
The DMs are open, Ma. Yeah.
All right, Robert, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are?
I've been looking up a lot of Ragnar Benson books lately, so I've been reading Man Trapping and Man Trapping 2, and I've just been trying to find out as much as I can about this guy. He's this nut who writes books about how to trap people. And like how to... He's got a whole book that just like lists how all of the different U.S. military armored vehicles drive and how to like disable their drive sections with like homemade equipment and stuff.
Wow.
Like it's like,
this is why I love having you on, Robert. Everybody's like, I Googled how to get rid of a wart or something. Okay, this guy, he's creating like the new manual to fight the government.
Oh, he wrote it like a decade or so. He still writes stuff, but like he keeps...
He's American?
Yeah, he's probably.
Right.
He says he lives in America. Ragnar Benson's a pseudonym. No one knows his real name. This is what I've been looking up online, is trying to find out about
this
guy.
This? Right, right.
Because from what I can understand, like you'd expect maybe it's all lies, but like... A lot of his books wind up in like military libraries, because he says his book Man Trapping was based on interviews he conducted in like Southeast Asia with like Vietnamese insurgents and stuff. So it's not like nonsense.
Oh, he's getting like the holistic view of man trapping.
Yeah,
like, it's
if
not
you
want to
trap
form.
A man trapping's a great book.
Yeah,
he has two books on how to make homemade C4.
Jesus, where did you? Is this
he
shit?
Didn't capture it in the first one?
No, he didn't capture man trapping in the first one.
He's like
hardcore poaching is one of his books. Like not the bullshit sissy poaching you'll get in the other poaching books.
Mm-mm. Ragnar Benson's gonna teach you the serious ass poaching.
Man trapping. That sounds like aggressive pickup artist book.
Man trapping and man trapping too.
Man trapping
and
too.
This is
electric
not,
boogaloo.
But I love the complete lack of metaphor here. Man trapping is about how to physically trap men.
This
is not. Yeah, you see that on the bookshelves. You're like, huh? I wonder. That must be like a book about argument techniques.
Nope.
No. This is about how to dig a hole and cover it up with leaves style man trapping.
Mm-hmm.
Are these books just available on the internet?
You can find places to download them through torrent sites sometimes. You can also buy them all. Like, it's not illegal to buy these things, although I'm 100% certain, like, if I wasn't on a watch list before, all of my Bensoning has gotten me on a
I'm sure just Googling it, it's like...
Yeah. No, Googling your name actually will get people on a watch list here. Yeah, by the way, we're talking about Ragnar Benson and how mysterious it is that that's not his real name. Robert Evans isn't your real name, which I learned like 5 years after hiring you at Cracked.
So, that is accurate.
Yeah, and we just won't go into it any more than that.
Wow, that's fantastic. Tight.
Yeah, Robert
Well, my name is Miles Gray.
Yeah.
So I'm boring.
No, I know. We had a lot of background checks done on you, man.
Yeah, well, thank you, I guess.
Robert, what is something that is overrated?
I think fucking bombing is overrated.
Bombing?
Yeah, bombing.
Like on stage?
No. like what the military does. Like, we've done it every time we've had a conflict. It's never won us a war. Like, we bombed Vietnam more than we bombed all of Europe in World War II. Didn't work. Like, bombing didn't stop North Korea. Bombing didn't work in fucking Iraq. It hasn't worked in Afghanistan. Like, it never works, but we're always like, well, we've got a problem. We better drop bombs on people. Like,
right.
Yeah.
But it's overrated. It's the humane way to fight a war, right?
It's like a lazy way to fight a war. No,
I do feel like because of the outcry against chemical weapons that we've heard, and completely justified, there's been this complete skipping over of the fact that, you know, when you bomb someone, like, people die horribly.
Pretty violently as well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I've got friends who are in Mosul right now who are going with volunteer teams, just like digging up the houses that we bombed, like over the fighting with ISIS, and they're just all filled with dead people.
Yeah.
Because it's just that's what bombs do. And it's like, it's everybody's like, chemical weapons are terrible, but like, if you look at how most people have died in the Syrian conflict, it's perfectly conventional, legal explosives. Like,
yeah.
And yet, you know. Anyway.
And I also think movies have misled us in terms of what explosions do, because in movies you can actually like surf on an explosion, like an explosion will like push you across the room,
like
a
shockwave,
strong gust of wind, like that shockwave doesn't just like push you over like a gust of wind, it actually will, like, it's called full body rupturing,
it bursts all your organs,
all your organs, it just like will shred your skin, it doesn't just make you like, there's that Mission Impossible 3 trailer where he like a shockwave from an explosion hits him and he like surfs it over a gap in a bridge or something.
Yeah.
And then like keeps running because he's Tom Cruise. And like, he just would have like started bleeding from all his pores and turned into a pile of human pudding.
Yeah.
But, yeah. It's not that. Yeah. An explosion isn't to be used like an air ramp in MTV Beach Blast.
Exactly. You
know, it will fucking destroy your body.
But yeah, I think there's part of us, because we almost never see somebody like die from an explosion in movies, explosions are just a way to like, you know, make a wall come down for the most part.
Right.
That we, when we hear that like we're dropping bombs on places, we don't realize like, yeah, no, people's skin is turning black and, you know, their blood is boiling in their skull and just horrible shit is happening.
I think the most accurate depiction of how most Americans view like, bombing is, the scene isn't bombing, it's that scene in Team America where one of the lady with the chain gun walks into that bar filled with bad guys and also women and children and just fires randomly and only hits the bad guys.
right.
Like, yeah, it's, but you actually, like, I've watched the U.S. bomb a city and it's just like, oh, we're just dropping explosives on a town. Like, they're not just hitting bad guys. It's just like, oh, you're just dropping them everywhere.
You were in a town that was happening on?
Yeah, I was in Mosul. I was watching U.S. planes drop airstrikes like a quarter of a mile away, like standing on top of a building watching other parts of the town explode and then walking through them later that day. And Jesus. It's just like, yeah, it's just random almost. Like, it's I'm sure that they had a target they were going for, but like, it doesn't look targeted when you're actually there.
I think people still cling to that idea of the smart bombs, including our president, who was like, believe me, these bombs are coming, and they're so smart.
They scored a 1600 on the old SAT.
Yeah, they're smart in the same way that my GPS is when it like refuses to route me off the 405 even though it's a parking lot in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
California, dude, the 405.
But we thought back during the first war in Iraq that you could, I think defense department official was like, oh, we could deliver this missile through a window. Like, that's the really evocative thing he said. Like, we can, like, choose a window in a building to deliver this missile through. And I think that just stuck with people. They were like, yeah, we've got these smart weapons now. Mm-hmm. Nobody has to die that doesn't have to. And it's like, no, that's not how it works actually anymore.
No, and none of this stuff works as well as the movies show. Like night vision goggles, like everyone thinks that there are like heat sensing. Everyone thinks that it's like this allows for super precision work. I have a friend who got shot in the leg by Americans. He was an American soldier who got shot in the leg by his own guys. Because they panicked and they were using a heat sensing scope and they were like, there's guys in that building, fire!
Really?
Yeah. Jesus. And they just didn't, like, there was a fuck up on the radio over like where people were supposed to be.
Wait, our body heat looks like their body heat?
Yeah,
I thought
weird,
we would have
right?
like different body heat.
There's red, white,
stars.
And blue.
What's something you think is underrated?
So my underrated thing, I think, is, this is exclusively for men, but it's getting punched in the
Finally.
Face. Finally. Getting hit in the face. I feel like every time I watch someone like Ben Shapiro on TV, I'm like, that's a man who's never been punched in the face. And
You learn a lot about yourself.
Yeah, not permanent damage, just like someone else. I feel the same thing about the Trump boys.
Yeah.
Like, that's never happened to them. Nobody's ever, like, even if they've been, I'm sure those guys have done MMA classes, but nobody's, like,
sure.
They're probably getting paid $20,000
a session
to not
hurt them.
By MMA,
I think that means,
them.
Like, assaulting a really drunk guy from behind at a party.
Right.
Yeah, no, I feel like there's a lot of overconfident guys out there who have really just one hit in the face would widen their world.
And will also make you very aware that, you know, people can put their hands on you and what that's like. And you might also have a little more empathy to know what that is like to be assaulted, to be manhandled, to be,
to face sudden pain and not really be able to do anything about it, to be just a little disoriented and helpless for a minute. It's good.
God, I love that video of Ben Shapiro sitting next to the trans journalist who just like... Stop it, little boy.
Yeah.
And it makes him so scared.
And he has been whining about it for years ever since.
Yeah. Wait, what video is this?
He's like, you're not a woman. You're a man. Look at you. Like, to a trans woman. And the trans woman is a journalist who also has, like, a military background and could, like, literally fuck Ben Shapiro.
Shake him right over her knee.
And Ben Shapiro's just like, talks a big game and it's just like, yeah, you're not shit. Like, I don't.
Oh,
like,
wow. And then just knowing that,
physiologically,
like...
and then like the trans woman just like leans into him and is like, just stop it right now. You don't want to go down this path, essentially.
Oh,
it's just, it is some
Let
real
ben
shit.
Know, yeah.
No,
yeah, yeah.
I read a column of his, and I think the column came from like 2008 or 9, where he's talking about, like, I don't see why we care so much about civilian casualties in Afghanistan. I don't care how many civilians die there. If it prevents one American from dying, it's worth it. And I was like, Ben Shapiro should be punched in the face.
Yeah.
Like, you should.
You don't understand the value of life at all.
Yeah. So someone should hit you in the face just a little bit. Yeah. Mm. Underrated.
I think the most pain he's been in is like biting into a Hot Pocket too early after bringing it out of the microwave.
And that's a pain he suffers every morning.
It burned the top of my mouth.
I'm going to complain about
fucking
liberals.
Now I'm going to complain about the fucking Sharia law and shit.
What is something you think is a myth? What's something people think is true that you know to be false?
Oh, yeah, that raw meat's dangerous.
Uh-oh.
Yep.
Love raw meat.
Here we
all
go.
Well, just don't.
I eat raw meat.
Yeah, eat raw meat. Don't wash your hands after using it. It'll make you stronger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I use
Salmonella is a lie.
Every night, this is my beauty secret, and I'm about to unveil it. Every night, I like to go to bed. I put a nice, cold, raw chicken cutlet over my eyes, and I go to sleep, and that's how I stay youthful.
And no bags. I'm seeing
no
bags,
bags
under those
just
eyes.
Just a lot of weird sort of pussy things.
Yeah,
but I call those beauty marks.
Yeah. I feel like that's unrelated to the raw meat.
But yeah, I mean, like, in Japan, like, you know, there's a lot of raw meat being eaten, but it's like thin slice. It's like the kind of beef that you can't
carpaccio.
Eat raw. Like a carpaccio and shit like that. I'm not saying
you
go,
shouldn't go to,
don't go to
KFC
Ralph's,
and be like, yeah, I want it medium rare.
Yeah, medium rare.
Yeah, I don't know if I can co-sign this myth necessarily, but okay.
Why, you don't eat a carpaccio? You wouldn't
eat
a
carpaccio?
No, I've
had carpaccio, and
wait, so
I eat my steak medium rare. I'm okay with that.
But Robert, what are you...
Very select circumstances.
I'm saying freaking out over raw meat is cowardice.
Right, because there are people who, like, I know people who...
Oh, no, you touched a chicken. You deal with it.
Yeah, or people who, like, they say, like, oh, I love steak, and they get it so well done, and you're like, what are you doing? Or if they see a thing, they're like, oh, there's blood in here. It's like, that's not blood.
Did you think you weren't eating an animal?
Exactly. I want it to be gray and colorless.
Yeah.
Right. All right. We're going to get into the stories of the day. We're trying to take a sample of the global or national shared consciousness, what people are thinking and talking about right now at the moment we record it. And in the past couple of days, the Sacramento Police Department, I believe, has captured the Golden State Killer.
Now, who is that?
So this was a cold case, but it was one that we had actually written about on Cracked many years back, because it was just like really some of the creepiest crimes ever. First, the person started out as known as like the East Area Ransacker or the something Ransacker. He would go into people's homes and like steal photographs of them. And like just when he was caught, he like would start crying in this like really high-pitched voice. And then
like run off?
Yeah, and then basically run off. But like just like really weird, like almost like an alien behavior. But then he would like call people and be like, I'm going to kill you. Whose houses he had like broken into and like Damn. This really creepy voice. Then somebody started like raping all these people, and they started like thinking it was the same person because of like a couple pieces of evidence connecting them. And then the person started murdering people. And the way he would do it is he would like watch them, observe them for like weeks, get their schedule down, Hide in their house until they were asleep, and then come out with a flashlight and rape the women and occasionally kill both the women and the men. And just really, really creepy shit.
Like, wow.
Would just gain access to people's homes.
And like, this was like in the 70s and 80s?
This was late 70s, early 80s, yeah. And then it just stopped and nobody really figured anything out. And then Patton Oswalt's wife, the crime writer Michelle McNamara, who passed away in, I believe, 2016, you know, tragically and unexpectedly, she died in her sleep of, I think, an undiagnosed heart thing. And, you know, she had a bunch of prescription medication in her blood that might have contributed. But overall, you know, it was just a weird freak thing. But she basically became obsessed with this story. And she was a really great writer and started writing about it and got a book deal and, you know, started writing this book called I'll Be Gone in the Darkness about this case. And prior to her writing about it, people hadn't really publicized it. There was like a single Unsolved Mysteries episode about it.
Oh, okay.
But like they hadn't even like connected all the different details of it. And she was the first person to name him the Golden State Killer. Like prior to that, they had like some weird acronym like EAR or something.
Right.
East Area.
Like a
Ransacker.
BTK kind
yeah,
of
yeah. It was like nobody paid attention to it until she like started getting people interested in it. So her book, she died before finishing the book. Patton Oswalt got a couple of her best friends who are also crime journalists to finish the book for her. And it went directly to number one on the New York Times bestseller list just like in the past month. And like they were on a book tour for it. And that's when Sacramento police solved the case. So
great marketing.
Mm-hmm. Sacramento police are saying she had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
But they're saying this at a press conference where they're calling him the Golden State Killer, which was like her term.
Thing, right.
And like,
wait, so is it conceivable that her book actually did put things together? Or this was like an investigation that was really happening for a while?
I think it's conceivable and probably the actual truth that they were not pursuing the case in a meaningful way.
That's
until
what I
she added, like, yeah,
right,
made it
right,
famous
right.
again.
So I think that's exactly right. There are 15,000 murders in the United States every year, and one third of them go unsolved. So that's just like a huge number of unsolved murders that are piling up. And, you know, they just hadn't looked into this enough, basically.
Right.
And once somebody started looking into it and it became a New York Times bestseller, or they knew a book at least was coming out about it, that becomes a top priority because you don't want to get fucking embarrassed.
Right. And then the book's like, I know who it is. And the police are like, okay. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to get a little conspiracy theory-ish
Because
this guy, the Golden State Killer that they've arrested, was a former cop. And so you have to think, if they didn't know exactly who it was, there were probably some signs that this guy might have been a cop.
Right.
And so maybe they figured, well, he's old. It'll be bad PR if we pursue this thread. So maybe before the book came out, maybe they weren't trying all that hard.
Right. They were just like, we always had a suspicion that this guy was weird. And the reason he left the police force was because he got caught shoplifting dog repellent and hammers, which one of the key ways the guy killed people was hammers. And the thing they could never figure out is how he would get past dogs. Mm-hmm. And the way he would actually do it is he would just like lay in people's yards and like get friendly with the dogs. And like, but sometimes he would have to like spray the dog repellent to like keep the dogs from freaking out about him. So he got caught shoplifting and the police were like, okay, well, we'll just like do a trial, like a quick thing. This won't be like that big a deal for you. And he was like, rather than that, I'm just going to quit. And, which was like really weird. They were like, why would he just quit if he...
Okay, Sergeant Stabs.
Right, just like super, you know, suspicious behavior that they just didn't look into. This also happened with a crime podcast, Up and Vanished, where they started looking into this cold case. I listened to, I think, the first like 8 episodes of that and was like certain I knew who had done it. And that turned out to not be who had done it at all.
Yeah.
But they did solve it like as this podcast was becoming popular. And I think it's exactly what Robert said.
Yeah.
It's that once this becomes a big story, it just moves that to the top of your pile of shit to worry about.
Yeah, it was funny because people were like, how did you not know about this? Like, you lived in California. I'm like, the early 80s, I was in the process of being born.
Right.
Okay, so I didn't know. And also, like, I'm not like a huge true crime person, but it seemed like it was really big recently with a lot of people who are
my
really
favorite murder
into
started,
true crime. Yeah.
Yeah, I went back to the My Favorite Murder archives to, like, find the Golden State Killer episode that, like, I knew they had done an episode about it and assumed it was, like, a year ago. It was, like, 3 weeks ago they had done
shit.
It. And then they caught the guy. But... yeah, so the way they caught him is actually really interesting. They caught him because people in his family had sent away their DNA to those like DNA database places.
Right, 23andMe and stuff.
Yeah, it wasn't 23andMe. It was a different one and not one of the well-known ones.
Right.
I've never heard
of it. Well,
we don't
need to plug them because they're not sponsoring anyway.
Yeah, they could. But
they could.
But it wasn't one of those good ones. It was some bad one. But anyway, so they were able to... basically look at this cluster of people and be like, okay, because they had his DNA from all the rapes he had committed, they were like, okay, the Golden State Killer is in this family.
Oh, shit.
And then just by a like process of elimination, we're able to be like, okay, this dude didn't live in Sacramento at that time. This person, you know.
Right, too young or
whatever.
Yeah, shoplifting dog repellent and hammers.
No, like, wait a second. Huh.
Yeah. And then, so after like doing all the process of elimination, they thought it was this guy. They went and like staked out his house, basically did what he did to those families, to his victims. They like staked out his house. And then like when he put down a lollipop or like a fucking cigarette or something, like snuck up, got it and took his DNA. And it was a 100% match.
Oh. Fuck.
Yeah.
Find police work, Lou.
Yeah. Exactly.
Take them away, toys.
I would like to see them just be honest and be like, yeah, it made us want to solve the case more, her book. Like,
right.
She definitely called out a bunch of suspects that didn't end up being the people who did it.
But that's like a valuable part of catching the guy.
Right.
Chasing leads that don't go anywhere. Like
right.
that helps. And like I think Patton Oswalt's right. Cops are never gonna give a journalist credit for anything.
No.
Especially when they're trying to sort of distract from the fact that, yeah, we caught this bad guy. He was also a cop.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I haven't read the book. I've read passages of it, and she's a fucking great writer.
Oh, she wrote an article about it. And
yeah.
I forget, but it's beautifully written.
She is an amazing writer.
Yeah, she's very gifted.
So worth checking out. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We will be right back. And we're back. And it is time to talk about Bill Cosby.
Mm.
Love that guy. What's he been up to? So, yeah, the Cosby verdict came in. He is...
guilty AF.
Guilty as fuck.
This is really... hurt my pet theory that he was the Golden State killer.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. This isn't surprising to, I think, anyone in this room that he was guilty.
No. Not at all.
When 30-something people come forward with basically the same allegation. But I do think there's like a weird generational thing and sort of a changing of the guard story here.
Mm-hmm.
Because he got away with doing this and, you know, with there being accusations that he was doing this for years. I think when in the 90s going into the early aughts, when the world was still run by a generation of people who knew him as America's Dead and the Jell-O guy, and maybe most importantly for white Americans during the 80s, the successful black guy who proved that systemic racism isn't a thing and that people just need to like pull themselves up by their bootstraps.
And that you shouldn't curse in your stand-up.
Right. As long as you're just clean and nice, everything's going to be all right.
Nice and respectable.
Right. And, you know, this was actually Hannibal Buress kind of brought these allegations back to the mainstream mindset in a stand-up act where he was like talking about the hypocrisy of Bill Cosby,
right?
You know, yelling at everybody to like pull up their pants and be, you know, respectable and not use swear words when like he's been accused of rape by 30 people. And that started, along with a Gawker article, started people talking about this again. But yeah, I just feel like there was this sort of myth that American culture really wanted to believe in the 80s, that like racism was over, that the Cosby Show helped them believe in and Bill Cosby helped them believe in. And so, you know, they just didn't want to let go of that. And like well into the aughts, there were like these things called Q ratings where they showed you how the public felt about celebrities. And I think like Jordan was still like years after he had retired, still rated in like the 30s. Cosby was rated in the 20s and like nobody else was over 15 in terms of like how trusted they were as a public persona. So it was like they're the two most trusted, most beloved figures, like still years after their career had been like super relevant. But I feel like we've moved on from that, both in a racial standpoint and also from like a, you know, I think the Me Too movement has actually made some progress.
Yeah. Well, and clearly, like you say, generationally, like I think Hannibal Buress, like we're of that age too, that we can look at shit like without the, like, I guess the rose tinted lenses of nostalgia and kind of be like, yo, this is also some dark shit that happened. We don't have to just dance around it or whatever.
Yeah, it's weird how like the generational divide before he got convicted was between like whether or not people would believe the allegations. Because to me, Cosby was like, I had vague memories of him selling Pudding Pops and wearing a sweater in like Christmas commercials. And so I was not like when I first heard that like, oh, people have accused him of rape, like I didn't have any reason not to believe it. But my parents like loved his show when it was on.
Right.
And I had this big argument with my mom over like, like, they're just trying to get something out of him. I'm like, there's like 60 of them.
Yeah.
Like, what are they trying to do? Get all the wealth and riches that America, like...
Right, and that shows you the sort of perception of him for people was like, oh, this man could not do wrong. He's the Dr. Huxtable.
He's Dr. Huxtable.
Yeah, I think there's a similar generational thing with how seriously we take sexual assault allegations.
Yeah.
You know? And I think the Me Too movement changed a lot of the way that, you know, we talk about these things in public. And the ways we talk about sexual assault and other sort of sexual misconduct in public. But the fact that, you know, we're finally bringing this guy to justice is, I think, a good sign.
Yeah.
At least a good first step.
And I guess at least that defense of like, they're just trying to get something out of him is no longer, that's seen as like a really improper thing to say when someone is accusing somebody of this kind of thing.
Yeah, I think one of the most helpful narratives is just that we started hearing from victims who were like, look, this is the most painful thing for me to talk about.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to talk about this.
Right.
I'm just doing it to help protect other people, basically.
So, yeah, I think, well, he's looking at up to 30 years.
Up to 30 years.
I mean, has there been a sentencing date yet, or that hasn't been set yet? I don't think there has.
I don't think they have set it yet.
Well, he's looking at 30 years.
Up to 30 years. The judge hopefully is not too permissive. Like, he let Cosby call the district attorney an asshole in court yesterday. So hopefully he gets a little stricter. And
that could show you some softness on the judge's part, that generation thing. Like, but that's old Bill Cosby. You know what I mean? Like, yo, this dude, he's a fucking criminal. Justice has to be served.
Yeah. All right. And we also wanted to talk about the... Some big changes happening on the Korean peninsula.
Yeah. Well, they're for a first time in a very long time, Kim Jong-un crossed into South Korean territory for a peace summit, and they were announcing, holding hands, like, hey, we're going to work together to, quote, achieve complete denuclearization of the Korean peninsula. And, Rob, you're pointing out that there have been peace talks before, but this is kind of significant because for the first time he's crossing over to the south. Because for the longest time, as people know, the Korean Peninsula has been divided along the 38th parallel. So that is a big move. It's like peace propaganda because like everything was so thought out and everything is so symbolic. And it's very interesting to like sort of read about the details of just sort of how meticulously planned this sort of peace summit was.
Like, this is the most Korean thing in the world. Like, there are these descriptions of, because of the importance of the talks, everything at the summit was like loaded with all this minute symbolism. The negotiation table is 2,018 millimeters, commemorating the year of the meeting. The legs of the table resemble two bridges merging, with the South Korean government said was to help bridge the psychological distance. The chairs were made of walnut because it isn't prone to bending or warping over time.
Ooh.
Which that one just sounds like maybe they got a good deal on some walnut chairs and tried to bullshit.
Some walnut industry propaganda.
Yeah. But yeah, and the meal, like South Korean president Moon Jae-in is he got a John Dory fish to eat, which is a southeastern fish, presumably voiced by Ellen DeGeneres. But it was one of his childhood favorites. And Kim Jong-un had a Swiss meal because he spent part of his childhood in Switzerland. And there was this dessert that had the Korean Peninsula painted on it. And it included,
got Japan hot, though.
Yeah, it had some islands that Japan had been like ours on, and that they weren't okay with.
It's a point of contention. Yeah. Who's claiming these islands or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, symbolism is like a big important thing of how they communicate. So I guess it culturally makes sense because in America, clearly we know what Donald Trump's plan is, literally just be like, hey, you comfortable? Fuck you, and walk out.
Right.
So I guess it's interesting to show that the North and South Korean leaders are trying to maybe show that they also want to take these kinds of peace talks into their own hands, exclusive of the United States and other outside countries, and being like, yo, this is our, like, we're going to figure this out too, that they're trying to hop in the driver's seat, which could be interesting. But yeah, again, this isn't the first time this thing has happened, so we can't necessarily just throw up the balloons and say like, oh, here we go, completely denuclearized. But, you know, at least we're seeing something.
So North Korea first promised to denuclearize in 1994.
Right.
They promised again in 2005 to give up their entire nuclear weapons program. 2006 is when they tested their first nuclear weapon successfully. Right. So this is like, they've got a long history of saying like, yeah, we're totally down for denuclearization. And then look at our nuke.
Something seems a little bit different now.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Again, because, yeah, there is a pattern of saying, yes, we will denuclearize. And then it's not, there's not exactly the most tremendous follow through.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say whether the thing that seems different is actually a substantive difference, or if it's just we're coming off of our president taunting their president, and their president then taunting us back and being like, you're Rocket Man, we're going to bomb you. And he's like, they're going to die in the flames of our nuclear weapons and shit. Like, if it's just like such a contrast that it seems different. But yeah, I mean, this is definitely something where Trump was out front being like, yeah, because we've had past administrations who've been played like a fiddle, and but they can't fuck with us anymore. They know that. And so they're kind of coming to the table, which doesn't seem like that's possibly what's going on. But it does seem like something has changed, possibly that it's just like, well, now both sides know that America is not a leader in the region, or it's not like they don't have America like as strong a force in the region. And so they have to like solve shit themselves, which might not be great for America in the long run, but it would be better than having a North Korea with nuclear weapons for sure. If in fact they are willing to, you know, disarm.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we even talked about last week about, and it's even possible that the new thing is that we've introduced a leader who we do not know really what they think or are not consistent. So that's kind of shaking things up too, that Trump may just be a wild card too. I don't know though, but at the very least, I'd rather be hearing about them holding hands, walking around the demarcation line than, you know, aiming artillery at each other. So
yeah.
Super producer Nick Stumpf was pointing out that on NPR, John Brennan, who's the ex-CIA director, who fucking hates Donald Trump and uses some of the most colorful language to describe how shitty of a leader he is, he even pointed out that, hey, you know, it is true to a certain extent that sort of this appeasement policy that the U.S. or the West has been using with North Korea hasn't really been effective. So perhaps you could point to the fact that Donald Trump's just insane fiery rhetoric is like a at least a shift in discourse that you may be able to say, okay, maybe this did change how North Koreans were looking at things.
Yeah, I do think that there's a risk, and this is something like that happens in every corner of politics where they intersect the U.S., of like focusing on like what we did and being like, okay, well,
right.
Trump obviously gets credit for this because it happened while he was president. It was like, well, no, the Koreans have been negotiating the entirety of the time since the war ended.
Right.
This is like a very long stand. Like it's kind of like us being like, look at how important America is, even when a shithead's in charge.
Right.
Like we caused this thing to happen. It's like, well, no, maybe this would have happened no matter who was president because they've been negotiating this for decades.
Right, right, right. Yeah, yeah, it's similar to like when I think Kim Jong-un met with like Xi in China. I think he was even like, yeah, see what I did?
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, there's definitely this tendency to want to be able to be like,
he's going
to
take credit regardless.
Yeah, and that's true. Like even how you say, Robert, that we even as like Americans from a foreign policy standpoint tend to think that everything is being completely run at every single moment by the United States when other people do exist in the world.
It's a big world.
Yeah, at the same time, America is a big and important power in
the
world, and especially when it comes to, you know, relationship with Korea and North Korea.
Yeah, but we can't discredit that other people are also putting in work.
Yeah, and I think it's a very specific way of looking at things to be like, well, they're scared of America, and therefore it could just be like, they're like, well, America doesn't really have the same cachet that it had before, so now we can negotiate a little bit more freely.
Yeah.
Well, and also, like, why would they be more scared of Trump than they were of Bush when their nuclear program was still getting off the ground and Bush was invading countries left and right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, no, I don't totally buy that either, but I just don't know necessarily what is going on in the Korean Peninsula yet, so I don't have an alternative explanation other than they probably read The Art of the Deal, and they were like, this guy's a genius. We need to sit down with him and just learn.
We saw him in Home Alone 2,
right?
And we realized we got a star on our hands.
I mean, there are sanctions, obviously, that North Korea has been being starved to death for years and years and years, so there's always the possibility that they were just tired of starving, which I would be. You know, there are all sorts of different explanations for it, but you know, if things are getting better for the world at large, then more power to
we'll take it.
We will take it.
Because we do not need that section of the world turning into a war zone.
All right. We'll be right back. And we're back. And it is Friday, which means that it's time for Bloid Watch. So the covers of the tabloids are overrun with stories about the royal baby.
Yeah, cool.
Boo.
Another baby.
This one is like, what, fifth, sixth in line, something like that. And its name is Louis.
Okay, good for you.
For, they said, named after Louis C.K. so, timely. Well done, guys.
That is a weird line for the royals to take.
I know.
Yeah.
I kind of like it, though, because, like, when I think royal and I think Louis, I'm thinking of, like, the Sun King, like, the most diva-ish male monarch in history.
Shout out to Cardinal Richelieu.
Wearing some fucking high heels around the palace and just being like, bitch, yes.
Yeah, looking with those little calf socks and stuff.
See, I would support the existence of monarchies if they still dress that way.
Yeah, for sure. We need that. Yeah. Just to be like, look, bro,
but
you're monarch,
all
you
the
can't
time,
even, don't wear regular people clothes.
When that one prince is, like, flying helicopters in the British Army, he still has to be dressed that way.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like scampering over to his helicopter in the little booty shorts and stuff.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. New rule.
Yeah.
This is Bill Maher.
Yeah,
everything really is. Actually, they're on every cover.
Well,
almost.
Not on my cover. Over here at the National Enquirer,
we are
throwing Michael Cohen under the motherfucking bus. So it's Trump's Fixers, Secrets and Lies. So this is kind of an amazing thing that I saw multiple places on the National Enquirer is that they are so confident that their readership only watches Fox News that they can break news that is just like the very basic stories that we've all been paying attention to for like the past 6 months. Like they're like, so Stormy Daniels is a porn star who Cohen paid $100. Like they're just telling the story of Cohen's role in this
wacky Stormy Daniels deal.
Yeah, and they also talk about his role in the dossier, like, and the meeting that Cohen allegedly had with Russian officials in Prague. So they're just basically throwing him under the bus. So we always should start this section out acknowledging that most of these are published, including the National Enquirer, by American Media Inc., which is run by Trump's best friend, a guy named David Pecker. And
what a pecker.
Exactly.
Basically, he can use all these tabloids to just help Trump's like media narrative. So in this case, it's like, oh, yeah, Cohen's a fuck up and Trump really never fucked with him anyway. So, whatever he did is a lie.
Right. They also are breaking the news that Facebook and Google know a lot about you and you should be concerned for your privacy. So, yeah, it's just
what in Google?
Google clusters, your favorite treat.
It's just basically breaking the news that we've all known for years.
Yeah, the National Examiner, which again, I feel like we should just stop buying because it's only news for people over 70. It's just like the final brave days of Loretta Lynn, or like Queen demand Charles divorce Camilla, or, you know, daughter tells all, the Larry Hagman only I knew. Who's Larry Hagman?
I do not know.
I mean, only that person knew him, so I have
Larry Hagman. He was JR. Okay, in Dallas.
Oh, shit.
I thought so. Okay, that makes sense, because that's the only reason why. My first thing was like, was he in Dallas? Because he has a cowboy hat in the image. Anyway, don't know, don't care. Moving on.
Title should have been the JR from Dallas that only I know.
Exactly. But I think if you're old, you know Larry Hagman. Larry Hagman. So this next one, In Touch, obviously they're doing their coverage of The Little Prince, but on the side they say, Jimmy Fallon is just drinking out of control?
Almost definitely, if they're asking that question. I think we can just assume it. So.
Yeah, and of course, they put a picture of him mid-blink, so it looks like he's all, like, bleary-eyed.
Right.
And then when they look in there, basically all they're saying is someone saw him at a Yankee game drink two beers real quick, and that's what they're basing it off of. So, I mean, they don't quite describe the pace at which he drank them. Like, I get if you drink two big-ass baseball beers back-to-back real quick, like you're downing them, then I may be like, ooh, you trying to get a buzz off those beers. But if he's just having two beers at the game, maybe sort of in a spirited way, I don't know if you can just say, oh, man, his drinking is OOC. Oh,
but, man, they got a great picture for it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Which is him sipping a beer.
Right.
So, again, yeah, his life's in shambles. And I think they point to the loss of his mother as a possible factor in that. And then what else they got on Us Weekly? Just more fucking weird shit to draw you in, like First Lady Melania doing it her way. So you're like, oh, okay, so maybe during all the cheating and all these other weird things, maybe she's doing something right. It's just about her life. There's nothing about doing it her way in any way. Let's see. The other tabloids, not very interesting. A royal baby. And then really what I like to point to is the Globe, right? So you can always tell, because David Pecker is Donald Trump's best friend, that like how crazy the cover stories are about the Clintons typically shows you how bad a shape Trump is in the news. So a few weeks ago, they were like, oh, Hillary Clinton has a brain tumor and she's dying. This week, they got it. Clinton's caught in double murder investigation.
Oh.
Holy shit. Now, when you open this story, it is insane. Because what they are trying to say is that apparently this guy who has a Little Rock radio show, this guy named Doc Washburn, had a former professional wrestler by the name of Billy Jack Haynes on his show. And he said that then governor of Arkansas, Bill Clinton, recruited him, quote, as muscle for a rogue CIA drug running operation and ordered the deaths of Kevin Ives, 17, and Don Henry, 16, after they accidentally stumbled upon it. So I guess... Bill Clinton was moving crazy weight, a lot of yayo from Columbia in Arkansas in the 80s. Clearly, it's about the Clintons, right? But the way they talk about it is always framed as about Hillary.
Right.
So even this thing is about Bill Clinton ordering these sort of murders. They say last December, 30 years after the innocent kid's death, Haynes revealed he was hired by a, quote, criminal politician to ensure nothing was stolen from an August cocaine shipment. That he was importing from Colombian drug king Pablo Escobar. So now you got Escobar in the Medellin cartel. And then it follows, the, quote, criminal politician Haynes swore to Washburn was Hillary Clinton's husband, also known as Bill Clinton.
Husband. Know, that's surprisingly woke, though, because it's always like whenever you've got like a notable man and woman who are married, sure, it's like right. The woman's his husband. Or yeah, yeah.
A right. crime novel written by Patton Oswalt's wife.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Sure. I support their wokeness in that.
In that, hell yeah. Yeah. And then so what they do is even more shocking. Haynes claimed Clinton gave the order to finish off the boys in a chilling cell phone call. He goes, "We can't leave no witnesses, Billy, you know, got to get rid of, can't leave no witnesses," Haynes says. "And I heard Hillary in the background saying the same thing. You cannot leave any witnesses." So first of all, bro, 1987, how many motherfuckers had cell phones?
Right.
Like that. You know what I mean? That's already like a weird technological thing. And also the fact that he has to add the added incriminating quote from Hillary off the phone being like, "Leave no witnesses."
Make sure he hears me say it too.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go. If Hillary Clinton were not the most boring woman in the world and had been, like, moving cocaine and murdering people, she would have won the election.
Oh, she would, yeah. Like, when Donald Trump was stalking her ass around that stage, she would have been like, "Yo, back the fuck off."
No, she would have pulled out a switchblade.
Yeah. Right. She's like, "I used to move wild white across the fucking border, man. You do not want this shit. What, you think
you
I dye my hair?
You know why Pablo Escobar is dead? Motherfucking me.
You know why Bill's hair is white from all that fucking blow we was doing in the 80s, bro? Back up." So, yeah, that's clearly not going on. So, again, shout out to the Globe for really trying to distract people again to point the finger. No, it's Hillary Clinton's husband who is the murderer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very clearly.
So, cool Bloid watch this week.
All right. A couple other stories we wanted to hit.
Yeah. Alexa, raise my kids.
Hey.
The new feature is coming out, I guess, called Free Time on the Echo. And it's basically optimized for kids so you can just leave your children alone with a Echo and they can ask it all the annoying shit like, "Why is the sky blue?" and stuff like that. So in this new feature, it will basically turn your CIA surveillance tube into a child caretaker now. And like it will, you know, it can limit access to shopping features or news or other explicit content. And it also like optimizes the voice detection for kids' voices because they're like higher pitched or like, you know, kids say shit like, "Alexa," or whatever. So it'll know how to listen to children.
Oh, no.
And now instead of just giving direct answers when you're like, "Yo, you know, how many grams in an ounce?" It's not just going to say 28 grams. It'll give the kids more context. So it'll, you know, it'll give you more detail. So it's like really explaining to a kid answers that they want to know. So you can just be in the other room, smacked out of your mind, and let the machine raise your children. And it also has a like magic word feature that will reinforce sort of like manners, because there have been a lot of like think pieces I've seen from parents being like, "My kids talk so rude to these AI assistants," or whatever. So now it'll make you say like, "Please" and "Thank you." So, hey, parents, throw your hands up in the air, wave around like you just don't care, because Amazon has answered your prayers.
Yep.
Yeah, that can't possibly be a problem.
No.
Well, I mean, well, letting a little machine tube.
It seems like one
kids.
Of those things like where, you know, it seems funny now, but like really we will see these kids who were raised by like, not raised by, but got a lot of information out of an Echo from growing up. You know what I mean?
I feel like the more power we give Amazon over the developing minds of children, like the better off we'll all be.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
See you at high school graduation, Ramsey. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to fucking deal with this kid.
Bezos is going to show up at his graduation.
Yeah, your house is just littered with these new Echoes. I'm like, "What the fuck is this, Jack?" Yeah, these are my kids' new parents.
Don't talk to me.
Oh, and finally, I just want to bring up that Paul Ryan forced out the house chaplain out of his job, forced him to resign. The Jesuit priest who like does prayers and stuff for Congress,
he said, original SJW, man.
Dude, got kicked his ass out, and people were very confused why he like suddenly resigned. And it's because other House Republicans started complaining about him, like when they were voting on like the tax scam, he like led a prayer that basically asked people to get back in touch with their humanity and consider what the effects were of this bill.
Right.
And they did not fucking like that. So they were, that was like one of the first complaints. Then this Jesuit priest had the nerve to have an imam come in and speak to the house. And they were like, "No, no, no, this is bullshit." So all these complaints really had to do with the fact that he was a person of God who was really trying to inspire the teachings of the Bible in the most basic sense of like being compassionate and caring about people and not like running immigrants out on a rail or being, you know, a homophobic and other shit like that. And like another thing, apparently he had an interview in the National Journal where he was like saying like, yeah, like there needs to be more accountability in like Congress for like sexual assaults and things like that. So these are the kinds of complaints they had, and Paul Ryan caved, and now this Jesuit priest has to resign.
Well, if I know my Jesus, there's two things that he was all about, and thing number one was taxing the poor more heavily.
Yes, that's true.
And thing number two was he loved money changers.
That's true.
Money lenders.
That's why
banks.
He watched the tax collector's feet, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's a big fan of that.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, it's
and
all
white
about
people. He loved white people.
Loved white people, loved white Jesus. Then that's it. And then also, they even warned him like a few months ago where someone like literally said to him, stay out of politics, Padre. Like, just
really?
Be like, hey, stick to the ghost stories about Jesus, bro.
God damn.
Let me fucking steal from an entire generation of people.
Mm.
Boom.
All right.
Happy Friday.
It's a good Friday. Robert, it's been lovely having you, man.
Thanks
We're
for
so
having me.
We're so excited to have you on our network. Where can people find you?
You can find me on the Twitters at I Write OK, two letters OK. You can find my book on Amazon, A Brief History of Vice, and you can find my podcast, Behind the Bastards, dropping on May 1st, and you can find a new episode every Tuesday. It's going to be great. We're going to talk about Stalin's drinking binges and all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah. My God. It's amazing. I'm even on an episode coming up eventually. And I'm telling you guys, if you like history and you want to know weird stuff, I mean, I consider myself like someone who likes history, but Robert, your ability to dig up this stuff is second to none. So yeah, it's definitely worth a listen.
Yeah. And there's something about like bad people, like the bad guys of history, they're just like way more interesting. I think it's maybe because, well, first of all, they're crazy, but second of all, we just like have to turn them into just complete villains, so we cut all the interesting shit out of their lives. And
yeah, we dehumanize them. Like, I've spent most of the last 2 weeks for the episode we're about to record looking through everything Osama bin Laden had on his hard drives, just hours and hours of watching it, and it's nuts. But it's not like Bond villain nuts. It's like the motherfucker had like 40 hours of Tom and Jerry videos.
Right.
Weird.
Hey, man, I'm sure like because they didn't have like access to other like entertainment, so you got to load up them hard drives when you're hiding out.
Yeah. No, Tom and Jerry, very violent. And I think we can all now say that Tom and Jerry caused 9/11 for sure.
I've been saying that for years.
Yeah, you have been saying that to a weird degree.
Yeah.
Like almost every time we talk.
Yeah, give us Twitter a follow.
Hashtag Tom and Jerry Tree.
Yeah. Hashtag false flag, hashtag Tom and Jerry.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, turns out reality is like Batman movies, the villains are way more interesting than the heroes. Miles, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray, G-R-A-Y, not E-Y. Stop misspelling my name. It's very funny.
Come on, people. You can find me at Jack_O'Brien on Twitter. You can find us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information and sources of that information that we talked about on today's episode. And we also link off to the song that we ride out on, which, Miles, what is it today?
Today, let's do something from Little Dragon. This is a song called Clap Clap. I think come out like 2014, like 4 years ago. Wow. It's been 4 years already, guys. Yeah, it's just a great song. It's got big little synth vibe to it, and I just really enjoy Little Dragon, and I want to end this week on some high energy.
I also love big little synth.
Oh,
I've always
yeah.
been a fan of their work. All right. That was my dad joke for the week.
Yeah, that was cool.
It was hilarious. All right. We're going to ride out on that. We will be back on Monday. Talk to you guys then. Have a good weekend. Bye. I stand and waited for my turn. I tell it all.